Welcome back to the Sister Girls Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Cherie. On this episode, I got the chance to interview Ms. Shanita Hubbard. She is the author of Ride or Die, a feminist manifesto for the well-being of Black women. This is a book I believe all Black women should read. In her book, Hubbard describes the Ride or Die chick as a woman who holds down her family and community. She's your girl that you can call up in the middle of the night to bail you out of jail, and you know she'll show up and won't ask any questions. Her Ride or Die trope becomes a problem when she does it indiscriminately. She does anything for her family, friends, and significant other, even at the cost of her own well-being. No is not in her vocabulary. Her self-worth is connected to how much labor she can provide for others. She goes above and beyond for everyone in every aspect of her life, work, family, church, even if it's not reciprocated and doesn't require it to be, because she's a strong Black woman and everyone's favorite ride or die chick. To her, love should be earned and there's no limit to what she'll do for it. Sister girls, this conversation was so good and I hope you enjoy it. Be sure to follow us on all social media. It's Sister Girls Book Club everywhere. Thank you for listening.
Welcome, Miss Shanita Hubbard. Let me just give you, let me tell the people about you. You're an acclaimed writer. You've been featured in New York Times, Essence, Fusion, Ebony Magazine, and so many more. You was an adjunct professor of sociology. You have a passion for social justice, and your tweets low-key always hit. Like on Twitter, you tweet, okay? And now you have this book, Ride or Die, a feminist manifesto, for the well-being of Black women. And like I said, I've told everybody and their mama to read this book. So welcome and thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me. Like I said, you pulled my edges and low-key was just handing them back to me piece by piece with this book. So how are you doing today?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for such and welcome, and thank you for engaging in my work so critically. I just invited you guys in, right, to take a look, have a seat, eat what, you know, fits. So I can understand feeling like your edges were snatched, because I mean, I get it. But thank you for engaging in my work so critically. Thank you for supporting it. It means the world to me.
Yeah. So, okay. First question out the gate is, when writing this book, did you have any hesitation when you thought about all the layers that it would open up, specifically when it came to speaking on Black men in the Black church? Why I said those two specifically is because we're at a really weird time when it's like, if you say anything even remotely bad about the Black church, they are coming after you. And the same thing with Black men. It's like, the thing is, it's like, because Black men feel so attacked and they have been so attacked systemically and just in the media and everywhere else, it's like anybody who says anything that could challenge the way of thinking or popular thinking, they automatically see it as a threat and want to take you down. So did you have any hesitation?
Girl, all of it. But to your point, one, what kept me going is like, I want to stand in my truth, right? But beyond that, one, it's so important to know that critique does not equal contempt. And there's this Baldwin quote that I'm gonna paraphrase, so I don't mess it up. He says something like, I love America. I think it's the greatest country in the world. And because I love it so much, I reserve the right to critique it the way that I do. I don't know if I'll ever share James Baldwin's Patriotism for America, but I love us for real, as in the Black women, Black people, Black men. The Black church is a part of our community and it's forever, always going to be mine and ours, right? I exclusively date Black men, right? When it became time to create a child, I wanted her father to be a Black man. Like, I was raised in the Black church and it's always going to be mine. And because of this, we can have these larger conversations where I'm going to push it to be better because it's mine, right? And critique does not equal contempt. And to your point, if you say something, even sometimes it feels like on a social media streets or just in general, if you say anything outside of the parameters of protect the Black man, it can be perceived as an attack, which is bizarre and crazy to me. It's like, knock it off, because there's a whole, and it's in 2023, sis, you wouldn't even believe this. This people where if you say that you identify as a feminist, in their heads, that translates to I hate men, right? So mind you, so I have the nerve to identify as a Black feminist and say something other than, you know, protect Black men at all costs, right? Because multiple things can be true at the same time. Yes, protect Black men at all costs, but let's talk about some intra-community strifes that we're having that's harmful, particularly to Black women, and as a result, it's harmful for our community, right? And we're going to have these conversations because I want us to be better as a community.
All right, trust me, I've been on these TikTok streets, and I'm there with you. So for those who don't know, just in general, a ride or die chick is a woman who holds down her her family and community. She's your girl that you can call up in the middle of the night to bail you out of jail, and you'll know she show up and won't ask any questions. That was like a part of your definition, right? So, and speaking of the ride or die chick, because it was made popular like in the hip hop community, instead of using celebrity stories or just other people's stories to drive points home, you chose to use your own personal stories to help build out the framework. So my question is, why did you choose your personal stories? And low key, I have a few things to get off my chest with Anthony, but we ain't gonna touch on him. But I did want to know that, because you could have just used public stories that we all can kind of identify with.
Because I think it would be, I love that question. I could have talked about Meg Thee Stallion, to your point, right? Because there's Meg Thee Stallion in that dynamic of what it means to be the victim and the offender is another Black man, right? I could have pulled in all of the conversation that was around that, the terrible stuff, and in the ways we Black women showed up for each other. But of course, that's valid and important, but I think there's something to be said about showing your own scars, right? I think there's something to be said about, I remember the time where I wasn't healed and was hurt. This is how I got there, and this is where I'm going. I think that invites people to listen more. And plus, it's easier. It's so much easier to identify these pieces from a distance, right? It's easier to point it out in other people, but it takes work to hold up the mirror and look at yourself and dig deep and pour this out. And this was where you said your edges were snatched, honey. I had to be honest with myself about some things before I can be honest with readers. My edges were snatched. I was sitting there like, do I want to press send on this chapter? Or do I want to take this to my grave, right? So, but there is something too about being honest that invites readers to be honest and genuinely interrogate their own thoughts, even if they never go pen their own memoir or their own manifesto. I want us to be honest and interrogate our own thoughts and keep it a buck with ourselves and figure out what we're gonna do with this. And I can't ask readers to do this if I haven't gone first.
Yes. And I think a lot of times, especially with art and just even politics, Black women often, like one of my friends who's a writer, she said this, like, we often will show you our own wounds so the whole world can heal. And I'm like, every time I see a Black woman who does that, it's just like, not only is it courageous, it's also putting yourself in a vulnerable situation where not only can they attack your work, they can attack you. In attacking your work, they're attacking you as the person. And so, like, I commend you, because I was like, dang, she went, took it there.
You know, it's in there because this is important, Sheree. So I have a saying, like, I'll show you my scars, not my wounds, right? So if I, like right now, if you got a big gash on your arm and you cut yourself yesterday, right, you're not going to tomorrow go out to a concert with that wound just out in the open, because people can touch it and it'll get infected. Whether they touch it on purpose or whether they intend to do harm, they can touch it and then you can get infected. It will get infected, delay your healing, and possibly worse. So the stories that I present, but you would, however, go to a concert and expose it if it was already, if you had gotten this gash maybe when you was 12 and you've gotten stitches and it healed and it's fine and it no longer hurts if anyone touches it. I share things that I'm already healed from, because I understand, you know, that when you're putting stuff out there, everyone's not going to treat it like a baby or be respectful. But the things that I put out there are things that I already healed from. Like, you can't tell me, girl, Shadi, please, I see you now, but I remember when you was broke. I'm like, nah, sis, I remember too, because I told you. So you can't recognize these things against me because I healed from them.
I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, so the ride or die chick is quite frankly a Black woman's villain and a hero at the same time, when you broke down who she was and the many places she shows up. So how can we get rid of her? Do we need to get rid of her when so many women feel uplifted when they call themselves that? I also wonder, what purpose does she truly serve and who benefits the most by having her stick around? So,
ooh, that's a layered question. So let me rewind a bit, right? To add to the description that you already gave, there's another sentence in there, right? So operating in that capacity, being that chick, being that woman that's going to show up, like, I got you, you know, this is what happens, I need you. That in itself isn't the problem. The problem is when you do this indiscriminately, right? So there's this whole, there's this saying that, like, Black women will save the world. Like, a lot of us internalize that, right? We operate this way indiscriminately. So we're going to show up for people, hold them down, save them the world without even requiring reciprocity, because we have been conditioned to operate in that capacity. So we are the woman in the church, opening it up, you know, closing it up, there 24/7. We're there, you know, 10 Sundays in a month, just all the time, nonstop. And we give in our community like that. We give it in our families like that. We give it in our home like that. Not only sometimes, but the problem is when we don't require reciprocity, and also when we don't even require, we don't even stop to be filled up or even take inventory about how and who we are pouring out to, because everybody simply doesn't deserve a Black woman. And everybody simply doesn't deserve for us to show out in that capacity. And that's beyond relationships. And some of us are functioning like that at work, in our community, and schools, and we're giving of ourselves to people that simply, not only will they never reciprocate, but they don't value it, right? They do not value what we are giving. So I want us to take inventory of that. And then also the problem is, when we get so busy pouring out to others, we leave nothing for ourselves, right? There's so many of us, we done got so busy building other people's dreams, we forgot we had our own, right? We have been building bear to brothers that will never even say, thank you, sis, right? We have done all these things, not even just relationships, right? It's like, because wherever you go, there you are. So mm-hmm. To answer your question, who benefits from it? Well, let's look around, right? Who benefits from Black women saving democracy from itself, right? Because that's what we saw in the last presidential election. The whole world benefits. America, we force America to be the greatest version of itself, and the whole world benefits. And even in that capacity, right, how much are we still receiving from this country, right? We can save democracy from itself and still have to go to the hospital and fight for our lives, and knowing that, you know, medical racism is real and it disproportionately impacts us, right? So who benefits from it? Everyone. Do we need to eradicate the ride or die trope? Absolutely, right? But there's not, but multiple things can be true at the same time. I want Black women to be our dope, fantastic, unapologetic, wonderful selves, but I want us to be more discriminate about who receives that from us.
Mm-hmm. Got you. That makes perfect sense. So in your story, one of your examples was how if a Black man stumbles, Black women would just say he needs a good Black woman. And then if a Black woman stumbles, it's a whole different take, right? It's almost like, you know, she better get up. And, you know, just it's no kind of like sturdy. There's nobody to just help us, to aid us up. So if Black woman knows how tiring it can be to be the ride or die chick, why do we go so hard to give ourselves more problems in that sense of just saying that, you know, we're going to pile on? You already know she's struggling, but it's like, no, girl, keep that good man, or like help him out because he's a good man. And just by being human and existing, right, he's a good person or a good man. Keep that good job, knowing that it's stressing her out or whatever, but you will encourage her to keep all these things that are significantly messing her up emotionally, physically, mentally, and all the leads, right? But then also know how hard it is to have that ride or die superwoman trope on you. So why do we just keep encouraging each other to keep rising to the occasion that's unsustainable?
You said a whole word there, sis. So let me rewind for context, because for those who haven't yet read the book, I hope that's only a few of you. She's talking about in the first chapter. Right? And we're talking about how, and I was deconstructing the song Ride or Die from the Locks and talking about how Eve, as dope as she is, was, always has been, she's on that song singing a hook of this, and it's hip hop song that is talking about a woman operating in the most extreme form to show her loyalty to a man, right? She is like, you know, according to the song, using her stolen credit card to take this man shopping. And in return, he's like, I might make you do it again, bitch, tomorrow, you trifling whore, right? So it's kind of crazy when you hear these lyrics, and then you got Eve co-signing on the track, right? So it's just like, how? But before we get so quick to like shun Sister Eve, I wanted to talk about, you know, in the book I talked about how we co-sign and we're the chorus to some negative things, to like a negative quote-unquote song, so that the world is singing about Black women. So I was sharing, like, in my family, if there's a guy who has, you know, great potential, he's smart, you know, he don't really hold down a job because he kind of quits kind of often. He kind of can't keep an apartment because he's always quitting jobs. And then, you know, because he's not because he struggled with unemployment and housing inconsistency. You know, sometimes maybe that cell phone is not cut off, but he's smart. He's a good looking brother, charismatic. And one of the first things we'll say was he need himself a good Black woman to get him together, right? But let this be a Black woman. They'd be like, yo, sis, you got to get yourself together. What you doing? You know what I mean? So there's just a way that we perpetuate this as well. And so you answer your question, I was like, why do we do this, right? Why do we also put the S on other Black women's chest and be like, go ahead, superwoman, you got it. When we know that, that is harmful to us. The part of the problem is that we internalize some of these attributes as if they're positive. We appear to be maybe in the same age group where, right? So when we grow up hearing terms like that's an endangered Black man, that is a bad signal. What do you want to do for something that's endangered? You want to protect it. You want to fight for it, right? You understand that there's a war against this, right? But we grow up with labels like, that's a strong Black woman, right? That's, you got it, sis, you're a strong Black woman. So all of these, so we internalize that, like we want to be strong. So we show up, so we are being the strong one when we're giving ourselves of this job, and we know that ain't no promotion coming because they simply don't appreciate us. We are the strong ones when we keep going, even when we are excited, right? I mean, even when we are exhausted. So part of the problem is we've internalized these labels that were given to us, even though they possibly were meant to be positive, but when we don't allow, we operate as needed, we can't stop because we're so strong, that becomes problematic, right? So, but if you don't deconstruct that, and if you don't reject that, you are going to perpetuate it, right? So either you're recognizing something and rejecting it, or you're perpetuating it, right? So if you're at that place where you still think it's a sense of pride to be sister girl at the job that's been there 5 years, who never took a day off, you're going to commend another sister that's doing the same thing, instead of saying, girl, we about this hashtag soft life movement now, right? So it's about the way that we've internalized these labels and how we also see these as positive attributes.
I got you. So the ride or die chick in the Black church is a very complex issue to tackle, because she's doing it in the name of God, right? So whether she is the usher, the first lady, you know, the member who never misses a Sunday, or the woman who is staying by her cheating husband, or whatever the case is, who maybe even be abusive, whatever it is, because God says to work with him, she works with him. So how do we change the narrative when the Bible is used to back up holding up these systems of patriarchy that literally mirrors hip hop music that most churches would say is the devil's music? So like when you put it up against each other in a juxtaposition, it's like, yo, y'all doing similar things. It's just that you're saying it's in the name of God. And so how do we kind of like, not necessarily combat it, but recognize it and then kind of advocate for ourselves in the church, because we don't want to leave the church. We just want to have an equal playing field within the church.
I think we combat that on different ways, right? So on a macro level, we got to start telling the truth, right? We got to be honest as Black people. Like, listen, and I'm saying this from a person that I'm a spiritual person. Faith is my cornerstone and I am grounded, right? But we got to be honest. When people want to weaponize scriptures in a way that are beneficial to those in power, we have to remind each other of what that's looked like before. We've seen that done to justify slavery. We've seen that done to justify, you know, dehumanizing Black people with these same strict scriptures, right? So if we understand that we have seen this done before, let's be honest with ourselves. Do we think it stopped there? It has not. It has not stopped there. So on a macro level, let's be honest. And then it also, on a micro level, we have to have these conversations individually about how this is manifesting and showing up in our lives in harmful ways within spaces that's supposed to be safe for us. And even so, going back to your original question, when I was sharing some of my experiences in the Black church, it would have been very easy for me to share others, because there's others. We all know a story. But there's no power in that, right? So one of the things I told about when in the first chapter, I talked about at that time I was a whole, you know, full-time therapist and helping out other single moms in the church, and well, at the time I wasn't a parent yet, but I was doing things like picking up other kids after school and tutoring them. Of course, I needed the money, but I also wanted to give back to the other single moms in the church. And then I'm teaching like Bible study classes, and I'm there on Tuesday nights, and I'm teaching like abstinence classes to the teenagers, and then I'm like in the community helping out with Bible study there. Baby, I'm giving, doing, and just operating that for months. Mind you, not missing any services. And then I remember speaking to a person in leadership at the church saying, I'm tired. I take my days off from my vacation from work and I spend it here. And I'm saying, I'm physically tired. So I came to this person with, I love what I'm doing because I believe I'm doing it. I believe that I'm doing this for God. Like, you know, and I'm doing this for my community. This is very meaningful to me. And that person's response was, you shouldn't get physically tired if you're doing this for, you know, if you're doing spiritual good. Right. So that was a form of manipulation. I just didn't catch it. Like, what are you talking about? I'm not supposed to get physical. I am a spirit being in a physical flesh, and this physical flesh can get tired. And this person that said that, I'm positive that they know this, right? But it was really conducive for them if I continue to operate at this capacity, right? So we have to be able to identify in ourselves when people are really trying to weaponize scripture against us in a way to perpetuate an agenda. And I don't want to say like agenda to sound like a conspiracy theorist, right? But it's very helpful when you have non-paid people coming 5 days a week who are dedicated and loyal to help keep the operation going, right? So on a micro level, right, we have to distinguish between, you know, we have our own spiritual relationships needs to be intact, right? We need to understand the scripture for ourselves, and we need to be able to create and establish clear boundaries, whether it's in the Black church, whether it's in your home, whether it's at work, or whether it's with your friends.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's always hard, especially in the church, because you want to do good. So it's like from your own personal level, you might not catch it just because you're not looking for that. You're not looking for that type of belief system in a place that you would feel the most safest.
How do you even contend with that, right? So if you, for those who grew up like in a Christian Black church, and then we were taught that the reward is to always say, well done, my faithful servant, right? Your reward is in heaven after you die. So what do you tell the people that are working themselves and always mostly Black women giving pouring out until they are empty and simply breaking anymore, right? How do you contend with that? And I feel, and again, this is on an individual level, like I don't have the power to go speak to every Black preacher in the world, right? But I would say, like, again, like on a micro level, we have to reject this narrative that our love is connected to labor, right? That our love is connected to how much labor we can do and provide and hold down. We have to disconnect ourselves from our narrative, because once we begin to do that, when it presents itself, we'll start rejecting it, regardless of where it presents itself at.
Yeah, that the love and labor thing, I think that's the one. All right, so to switch it up just a little bit, you used Lauryn Hill, like, and that's one of my favorites, and the burden of the queen trope. So I'll let you explain that when you answer the question. And we see it in every facet, from the Black church to the college girl to the, you know, the girl who's educated to the girl who's the around the way girl who can dress better than someone else. So my question is, and I guess I was just thinking, why would women want to change this setup? The reason I'm asking is because for everyone at the bottom, there's someone who feels as if they are at the top, even if it's just in their heads. You have the virtue, like I said, the virtuous church lady feels she's elite when she can say she's not like them, the ones who are unsaved. And you have the college woman who can feel elite because she's not like them, the uneducated woman, and so on and so forth. So we often only think that men want this system to be held up. And that's simply, to me, not true. So why would we, like, what is the, yeah, girl, if I feel like I have power to say I want to dismantle that in your...
These are really, really great, thoughtful questions, right? So to be clear, I don't reject the idea of being called queen. I call Black women queens all the time.
It's a trope that...
I just want to make sure we're expanding it, because a lot of times when we're throwing around that word queen, it's very similar to how we're using the term Black girl magic, which I love, and it's dope and it's empowering, right? But my issue is when it becomes gatekeeping-ish / exclusion, like yes, so that Black woman is a queen because, you know, when we talked about Lauryn Hill, I just revisited the time where there was a piece of Lauryn that I connected with, that I know, you know, that I connected with when I was younger, right? I needed this to be some type of hierarchy. I needed for there to be a them. I needed to be, you know, the 19-year-old Shanita needed to be seen as, you know, the natural chick that shuns makeup without the hair done by the Caribbeans, so that, you know, so that I can get this type of respect for a man, from a man, or just in general. But I push back on that for a lot of different ways, because whether the sister's wearing an a relaxer, a weave, or whatever, she's still worthy of respect. She's still a queen. And then secondly, if you need there to be an other, I really need you to think deeper about how you feel about yourself, right? If you need this hierarchy, if you need to be like, I'm not like those other girls who don't have a college degree. I'm not like those other girls that are out in the clubs. And I'm not like those other girls that be on IG, you know, with their titties out. Why do you need an other? Let's not even talk about the other girls, but why do you need there to be an other? Why do you need there to be this system of this hierarchy, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that begs the question, like, do you want us to all be free, or do you just want to be at the top of the food chain, right? So my question is like, let's dismantle that in general. Like, I don't need for there to be an other. I don't need to feel the need to other another Black woman and make her feel or be less than in order for me to feel validated. And nor am I operating in a way where all of my life's decisions are centered around getting male validation. So that's something that we need to recognize and dismantle.
Yes, I like that. I like that a lot. So one of the things that I think when I was reading this book, I never thought about it. Like, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, snap, aha moment. You said, I don't see you as gay, I see you as a Black woman. Black women have been raised to accept forms of homophobia so much that we don't even see it as a problem unless it's causing physical harm, right? Our spectrum from, but did you die, to that's unacceptable is very wide. So how do we begin to close that gap so that all Black women feel safe within our community, no matter their sexual identity? Because
to your point, the spectrum is too wide. The whole, but did you die, sis? That can no longer be the odometer about how we measure harm that's done to our Black and brown queer sisters, right? And a lot of times I say that far too often, Black women, we get a pass because we get a pass for some things like our microaggressions because they're not manifesting in physical form. Like when you look at the data, it's not black women or it's not women in general that are physically attacking our trans sisters or that are physically attacking, like, you know, any members of the LGBTQ community, right? But there are those among us that are transphobic AF, right? But we don't get called out because sometimes that transphobia presents in a nasty tweet as opposed to physical violence, right? But we are fully aware how microaggressions from our white coworkers harm us. We realize that there's nothing micro about that aggression, right? We're able to see it, combat it, and push back. We have to do better when we are the ones perpetuating that harm, and when it's not physical violence. We have to be better when about spotting microaggressions, whether we're the one doing it or it's like someone else, and standing up and calling out the shit on behalf of our queer sisters.
Got you. And that's so true, because I'm like, I never thought about it. I was like, we all Black women, but it's like, when is the last time you asked them about their dating life as it pertains to their sexuality? It's like, oh, like, you know, it's one of those like, that you have to start really questioning yourself, or like really looking into why certain things are acceptable and why you, oh, they should just laugh it off, or it's not that big of a deal. And it's like, no, it is it's a big deal.
I was celebrating, because I know like Niecy Nash, and I can't remember her wife's name, right? I know that they were cut on a cover of Essence, right? Not everyone was like, hashtag Black love, right? There was definitely some pushback. Like, why? Yeah. What has this particular couple done to you personally, right? Mm-hmm. So why don't they get the universal hashtag Black love that, let's just say, I don't know, like a Aisha Curry and a Steph Curry would get, right? So we have to be honest about this. What it is about their love that's not worthy of our celebration that a cisgender hetero couple may receive?
Yeah. And so one of the things that you had that I love that you talked about was you are like becoming a Black mom, like your Black motherhood. And I'm quoting you when you said, in an effort to make sure that she always felt protected, I forgot to make sure she felt free. And when I say that hit, I was like, wow. So how can we help save ourselves so that our children won't be burdened by our own trauma when it comes to this whole ride or die chick trope, especially for our Black daughters? Because they're learning very early on to like be this, do your own, like be very independent, be able to do everything. And it's like, we're passing down a lot of stuff that we don't even recognize is that ride or die girl.
So I know publicly people might not know this, but I share this with you. So like right after, you know, my book dropped November 8th. Yes, excitement. Ow, we out in the street and we outside, we doing things. And then maybe like a few weeks later, my grandmother died and one of my aunts died, which is like, of course, it still makes my mind spin. So it's like a whirlwind. And especially because, and if you, when you read the book, my intro literally talks about my grandmother and her influence and my aunts, right? So as much as I love them, and you will clearly see that they, you know, shaped my life in the most amazing, profound ways, there are some things we need to leave buried with grandma, right? So, and one of those things is this strong sense of independence. We got this, right? Because no man is an island. So we may, I think verbally, like we may debunk that trope and we know it's not, but it's so deeply embedded in us generationally that it's going to take more than one book, more than listening to one podcast or more than one interview to really unpack that, which is why I am a really big fan of therapy, right? You have to operate from a place of healing, and knowing doesn't always equal healing, right? There's a whole step in the middle called work. So I'm a big fan of being in therapy so that I am not donating all of this stuff to my daughter. And one of the challenging part is sometimes you don't see it until you've kind of like, oh shit, you see it. And to your point, this particular chapter that you're bringing up, I am a very, we know about, you know, the data about how Black girls are disproportionately suspended in school. If you're a Black woman, you know what it's like to be a Black girl, right? So then you also know how, like, there's not an area in your life you're not going to have to fight against equality just because you exist as a Black woman. So I operate with this fierce need and desire to protect my child because she needs to, right? But in doing that, I forgot to center and create. I didn't do a great job of really creating a space where my Black child could just be free in our own home. And I didn't see this until my daughter was, one day she said something casual to me when we eating dinner. I asked her what she wanted to drink. And she's like, I get what I get and I won't get upset. Honey, I hate that term, right? And I'm like, where you get that from? And she was just like, oh, this is what my teacher said. So in my head, I'm just like, this white lady trying to make my baby some type of docile Negro. And condition her to not questioning anything. So I was at that school, you know, giving it to her and she's tearing up, I didn't care. So then, but I, this is how I would react whenever my daughter would say something happened at the school, I'm coming, because they need to know she got a mama bear at home. They need to know she don't play, without thinking of, so what is that atmosphere then gonna be like for my very non-confrontational daughter? So what happens is she's uncomfortable, she's awkward, she's like, oh my gosh, right? She's not me. Like that type of stuff would have made me feel protected. That type of stuff is embarrassing to her, it makes her shrink. She feels like she's going to have conflict with her teachers. So what happens was she stopped telling me things about her day. So now she doesn't feel free enough to share. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then not even just in school, just in general. And she said that to me. And we have really candid conversations because no child comes with a blueprint, right? And then sometimes you don't understand what you're still carrying from childhood until you're parenting yourself. So we do these every couple of weeks check-in. Like my daughter's allowed to tell me where I'm doing wrong. And then I'm like, okay, I hear you. Like, I'm going to try to do A, B, C, and D so it could be better. But then we're going to revisit this conversation in a couple of weeks. You tell me how I'm doing. So now, because I didn't automatically, that's not how I was parenting until I realized that my daughter stopped telling me stuff, right? So to answer your question, let's count on, I'm very anti the whole, because I said so, like conversation. Like that's not how I parent, because I want my child to think, to question authority. You can say whatever you want to me, respectfully, right? You ain't cursing at me, you ain't going that far, but you can say, mom, I don't understand why, blah, 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 blah. But we can have those dialogues. So I think if we want some things to die with our grandmas, then we have to kill them, some of these things, right? As they continue to manifest, and we have to do differently. And like I said, I'm a big fan of therapy and unlearning and unpacking, right? And I'm also, not to say that put this labor on your child, but listen to your children, right? Because they'll let them hold up a mirror to you. Let them see how they view their mother, you know, from this age, and really deal with what you see in the mirror, and even if it doesn't feel good. It's either that or you end up in your child's memoir 20 years later and you ain't gonna like
it. Talk about this is how I'm healing now. So from Song Cry to 444, what I loved about this was that you use hip hop, something that we all is like in our culture almost. And for me, I'm from Brooklyn. It's in my DNA. Like that is hip hop is a soundtrack. It has been for my life. And so you had this real, like, I'm going to read the quote and then I'll ask the question. So you have from Song Cry to 444, the album's by Jay-Z. And then you said, the less he sees the ride or die, the more she does for him. She embarks on this rescue mission, knowing that it may take more than one attempt. When and if the man does graduate from Song Cry to 444, she accepts that as her reward and a return on her investment, even if it's not until he's almost half a century old. In my mind, I'm like, how did this happen? And so I looked around at all the grown-up men and was stunned when I realized that they were literally hitting or have surpassed 50 when they have this enlightening moment. Or the other thing happens. It's like they have a daughter. So all of a sudden now they understand. And so it's just like, so if you got your wake-up call at 50, and let's just say at 20, we'll give you the, so for about 30 years, you've been able to just kind of like do whatever with no type of like, no care in the world, you know? And so I'm just like, how do we reimagine what accountability looks like beyond like a, oh, I'm good now because I had a daughter, or I'm sorry now, or I now am married at 50, so now I get it. But it's like, I was engaged to this other girl for 15 years and did whatever, you know, how do we reimagine what that looks like, that enlightening period looks like with accountability in the conversation when it comes to like these romantic relationships with Black men and Black women in this type of, sorry.
As a community, we have to stop getting excited when our men graduate from Song Cry to 444. It's so funny to me that people see these type of conversations as criticizing Black men, but I feel like absent to not have these conversations are an insult to Black men. To not have these conversations means like you simply don't believe there can be better. Means like you simply believe that men that operate at this capacity, they cannot grow. And I just refuse to believe that. Our Black men are dope, it's all outdoors, right? So, and I believe in their possibility. I believe that having these conversations will and can force the growth, right? So when I say stop getting, you know, excited that he graduated from Song Cry to 444, you know, in Song Cry, Jay-Z was talking about, he was ridiculous. He was talking about women putting cars in their name, you know his name, he doing goofy stuff, you know, she just go all this type of goofy stuff. And he's saying things like, I was just effing them girls, I was gonna get right back. I was coming right back. So he's graduated from that stupid stuff. And even this, he's like, I can't see, you know, I can't cry. This is most, as far as I can go. Like, I can't go much further than this. I can just say, I was just fucking girls and I was gonna get right back, right? Mm-hmm. So here we see a more grown up version of Jay-Z when he's really, he's talking about, listen, I'm really sorry for the time that I did A, B, C, and D. And it really took me the time, you know, for my daughter to be born to see the world through your eyes. And myself included, we all got excited, especially those of us who are hip hop heads, because we felt like, and I know my group chat was popping. I'm like, this is grown folk hip hop. We see Jay-Z. And although that's dope, it should have been another step, right? No more can we get excited for an apology without restoration. Like, it's mm-hmm. not okay to just be like, I'm sorry, right? You got to talk to me about what you're going to do to restore the harm. If you invited me to your house, right? You had this wonderful fancy dinner party, you got fantastic art, and I, going through some things in my personal life, some really harsh things, which you understand, right? And then I come there and I get smashed. I'm super drunk and I break up your favorite art, right? This really expensive stuff. I'm causing this loud scene at your dinner party. So then like a few days later, I sobered up and I come back to you and I'm giving you a PhD level of analysis. I'm like, girl, I'm so sorry. I started drinking because this happened with that person and this happened. Yeah, I told you about Natty died and it was just too much and blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm like, okay, I understand, but I'm probably not going to get another invite back to that dinner party unless I'm like, well, how much is the art? You know what I'm saying? I'm going to replace the art that I bought. And who is there? Because let me see the guest list because I want to individually apologize to them, right? So unless I'm doing actionable steps, you can't believe that I'm sorry. You can't believe that's not going to happen again. The problem is in our community, we let reintegration without restoration. We let people be like, it's okay, you can come back to the dinner party before saying, how much was that art that I broke? Who do I need to apologize to? Damn, was that your boss? Let me go try to fix this. So we allow people to reintegrate back into our lives without restoring the harm because we get so excited that there's an apology. We get excited when there's a graduation from Song Cry to 444. And we have to break that cycle because it's the accountability piece. It's the restoration completion part that really demonstrates that that person is ready to reenter back into your life. And it really demonstrates that that person gets the harm that they caused. So what do we say when you have a guy that's like damn near 50 years old and was like, wow, I had a daughter. You know, now I can see the eyes through a black woman. When this same black man like, bro, you got a black wife, bro, you got a black mother, you got a black sister. So it took for you to create some black woman that's physically yours for you to consider the world through our eyes. Mind you, we grew up from like 15 hearing narratives about the endangered black man and why we need to protect them and understanding the world through your eyes. If you speak to a lot of people that are activists, they can tell you some of the things that radicalized them was police violence against black men, which is an understandable just cause. I was out in the streets myself, but very few times you hear them talking about, you know, this medical racism, you know, against black women and the disproportionate mortality rate really had me out there in the streets. Because even as we still sometimes struggle seeing the world through our eyes first, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we fix this? You can't fix something that you don't want to reveal. Right. So the moral, so part of, to answer your question about why am I speaking candidly, like we got to tell the truth. We got to reveal it. And then we got to talk about how we fix it and accountability and restoration.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. So one thing that I realized was that Anthony, for the sake of the story, he wasn't the good guy. And Tyrone was the good guy, he was the smart, the one that you want to bring home to mama. And they probably lived two entirely different lives, but they still idolized the ride or die chick. These are two totally ends of the spectrum. And so how do you think that women can then counter their responses and advocate for themselves when they are presented with this title, or that when they see the conversation even start forming? Because like I said, the Anthony and Tyrone, like I said, two different opposites, but they still held that same, like, I need a ride or die chick, you know? So it's like, how do we counter it when we see it in the guys that we like, whether it's romantically or our friends, our guy friends, or our brothers, cousins, uncles?
It's not like all men are saying, like, I want to ride a die chick that's going to take me shopping with her credit card twice in the store and hold me down while I'm doing a bid. For a lot of us in our community, these are attributes that we have collectively, men, women, but all of us have been taught as a good thing, right? So we don't really have enough community, which is the reason why I wrote this book. We don't really deconstruct and peel back the layers to what it is that they're asking of us. So some they're like, yeah, I need a ride or die chick, right? They're just thinking of, you know, a chick that's a woman that's going to be by my side and hold me down. That's really dope in itself, right? But let's take this, when we push back on this narrative and this trope for a ride or die chick, we will see that how it really is us giving labor indiscriminately. So what I think is even the good guys don't realize sometimes when they ask too much of black women, when they're not reciprocating, right? When they want these things. Because to your point, Tyrone checked, the name I gave him, but he did check all the boxes, right? You know, like master's degree check, you know, good job check, you know, good family check, all these, you know, handsome, all these good looking things. But he also was not the type of man that knew how to reciprocate, right? And I didn't put this in a book, but one of the deciding factors where I was like, yeah, I can't do this, is that he knows how to receive. He knows how to receive care and attention from a black woman. Let's say that, oh, wow, you've been working, you know, triple overtime and you're probably exhausted. I know sometimes you don't stop for lunch. Boom, let me just send you an Uber Eats. He is appreciative, but he's not that man that's going to do the same for me. Like, oh, I see that you're working nonstop on this book, and let me order pizza for you and your daughter. He simply does not think like that, even though he checked all these boxes, because it's so ingrained in our culture for it to just take. It's everywhere. You know, if our church is telling us that God wants, you know, well done, your faithful servant, this is the reward. The men that the Tyrones of the world, the men that we value and like, are telling us, like, this is what's dope too. It's in our music. We're doing it with black women. This is how we're affirming each other, right? It's so inundated, and we so have inhaled it and normalized it that we need to take the time to push back. Because even when it comes from people that are seemingly dope on the surface, it's still there. But it just speaks to how normalized it is for Black women to operate in this capacity.
Yeah. That's deep, because it hits so many places where it's just like, how do you like get it when you see it? And then just how do you bring it on down to not feel like you're trying to be combative or not take a compliment? So I wanted to talk about, this is like the last question about healing. And you had this quote in your book, and I have a question because that kept like turning in my mind the whole time when I got to like the last couple of chapters. And you said, I've been celebrated for my ambition and the affirmations I received from other Black women bring me joy. But the praise also allows me to hide in broad daylight. It allows me to reinforce this behavior and prevents me from digging deeper. So my question is, and thinking about the ra-da-da chick and Black women and how sometimes we're praised for being that woman, do you think sometimes we uphold it? Because if we took away the ride or die chick trope, because it's a positive, that we might be afraid that we won't have anything else as a title that we can aspire to. So like outside of the ride or die chick, what else do we have? It's all these negative stereotypes about Black women. This is the one thing that we have. I mean, there's other titles, but this is the one thing that it loops a lot of Black women in under umbrella. Like I said, the college educated woman, the Black woman in church who's a virtuous woman, the Black homemaker who's married, and you know, like the Aisha Curry's, not saying she's bad, but like it's a good thing. But they all simultaneously operate under the umbrella of the ride or die chick. So if we were to like completely dismantle her, then what would be, are we afraid that we would be forced to kind of reimagine our own identity? If we're not the ride or die chick, who are we?
We define ourselves for ourselves, and that's who we are, right? We have to define ourselves for ourselves, right? And to your point, right? Gosh, you said something that was so good, but I didn't want to cut you off. Because I was talking about how, and they were like, wow, Shanita's really out here killing the game. You know, she's published in this article on Monday, and then the next week this one came out, and the next week that came out, right? And these are one, I see you, sis. You know how we compliment each other, like, yeah. But what you didn't see was that I'm working nonstop because I'm terrified of ever having to be broke again. So I'm not even enjoying the fruits of my labor. I'm not even enjoying the person I'm doing this for. And then, as a matter of fact, and it's never good to be led by fear, right? This is not this. At that time, it wasn't ambition, it was fear, right? If I say no to this assignment, will the email stop coming? If I cancel these interviews because I'm mourning my grandmother and my aunt, will they still want me, right? So it's all of these things. So they, while the people are rewarding me for being so ambitious and keep going and she out here killing the game, beneath it all, you don't understand that it's fear, right? You don't understand that it is a trauma that I need to address, right? And it's not that these accolades are wrong. It just makes me it makes it easier for me to hide and not do work and unpack, because we are really conditioned to give ourselves, we are rewarded for our labor. We celebrate each other for our labor all the time, right? And there is a thin line between that, because it takes a lot for us to be who we are. And we want to celebrate ourselves. We want to celebrate that, right? But also, let's be intentional about celebrating each other and ourselves for things that have nothing to do with labor and or success, right? So, and that's all goes to part to like redefining yourself by yourself in terms of like things that matter most to you. Like, because like you said, a lot of us are, we happily wear that crown, that title, because, you know, it's seemingly more positive than the other things that we were getting, right? So then your question is, once we dismantle her, who are we? And my answer is, sis, you tell me. You get to define yourself by yourself, and I'm gonna respect that. And that's who you are, and we get to do that.
Yes, I love it. And I think we're starting to see it now. I feel like I have so much hope, whereas like, you know, I don't know if our grandmothers and our aunties they didn't have social media, obviously. And I always say, like, I've never saw my mother or my aunt, even though they came together themselves to be around each other and have like their own Black joy, but I've never seen them like have a place where they could just go to a book club or to go. It was always church, job, home. It was like in those type of orders. So I feel like, and now I'm just starting to see, especially on like TikTok, where you see like Soft Life or like, I want to be celebrated for doing the bare minimum. And you're seeing like the videos and like people are having conversations where Black women are just literally going to make coffee, going to do run, like going to, and they're just chilling. And like, that's the day for them. And they're showing you how they are like decompressing, and they're showing you how they're in therapy, and they're showing you how they just want to live a luxury lifestyle. You know, if they so choose to live that lifestyle, they're okay with it. So I do believe that we're getting examples of it small and short, like even like the NAP ministry. You know, there's so many small steps, but mighty steps that, we are taking. And I do think that this book is going to, like you said, you don't want to call women, Black women out, you're trying to call them in. And I love that because I feel like it's one of those things where I'm not trying to fight with you, sis. I just want you to look at it from a different standpoint and to not only help yourself, help other Black women. And the next time that you want to vilify or judge another Black woman, just take two steps back and let's see where we're coming from. So this was a great conversation. I got some flash questions right quick where it's just like you have to think about it off the top of your head. But before we get there, I just want to thank you because like I said, that book is changing lives. Like I'm telling you, one life at a time, because it really had sit and think like deeply about some things.
You feed in my soul. Before we get to the flash questions, can I add something? I love that you brought up the soft life, right? And I love that narrative. I just want to make sure we are expanding that a bit, right? Because a lot of times I see hashtag soft life. I'm about to jump on this first class flight. Hashtag soft life. I'm about to go to the spa for the day. By all means, sis, do it. I love me a spa. Spa me, please. Right now, please. I love it. But make sure that we are expanding this beyond capitalistic definitions and understanding of a soft life, right? And I also, and when I say this because, and I also say this because soft, the soft life also includes being soft with how you talk to yourself. One of the things that I had to reject was this, and I'm going to tell myself the truth so I can get over this, right? Because I remember like trying to get over, you know what I'm saying? Like this one particular guy. And I'm just like, this is it. It's all right. It's done. You don't want you to eat it. Just move on, right? Just being like talking to myself really harshly because I'm thinking that's what's going to help me get up, move on. And I would take it a step further. I would rehash every harmful, terrible, toxic thing that, I mean, we went through. Not that I've had like a lot of terrible relationships, right? But if there's one, probably like maybe one of, probably just one, like really bad one, right? So if I'm saying, so in order to let go, whether it's in a relationship or whether it's a situation at work, it could be anything. I relive the most toxic thing that I went through there as a way to force myself into not missing it. And that's really harsh. We would never talk like that to somebody else. If your girlfriend was crying because something happened, she lost a job that she really cared about, we would be tender and loving with her. If she was, upset about losing a partner that she thought was her person, we would be tender and loving with her. We are not like that with ourselves. So reframing a narrative in our head is also part of this soft life. So now, whether it's a career, a professional decision, romantic decision, or even friendships, I tell myself, I wasn't rejected. I was redirected to the path that is most in line with what God has for me. Period. I was just redirected to just be better aligned. Now, just the way that I'm talking to myself, like that is also part of a soft life. So yes. So my thing, I love that. I love to see us claiming to be soft. I love fighting for that. But I also want to make sure that in the middle of the night, when no one, we're soft with ourselves in our head.
Yeah. I totally agree. I agree with everything you said. So, and I loved it. So the flash questions, favorite time of day to write, night or day?
My favorite would be in the daytime, but sometimes I always, I can't really find time to the night, but it's day.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
I'm aiming to be a tea person, but I'm a coffee girl. The goal is tea, though, girl. The goal is tea.
Okay, the show Living Single or Girlfriends?
Oh my gosh, that's tough. You mean I gotta choose?
Yeah. Hmm. Flash questions.
Okay, I gotta go. Okay, I would kind of say Living Single, right? Because what they were showing at the time, there was no Khadija James in the world at the time. So Living Single.
Malcolm X or Martin Luther King?
Malcolm.
Okay, Jay-Z or Nas?
Sis, okay, it depends on where I am in life. Really tough, but Nas.
Okay, is it Uchiwali or is it One Mic?
Always One Mic.
Okay, and who is Shanita Hubbard?
Shanita Hubbard is a Black woman that is always growing and evolving so that I can get the best version of myself and so with my family and my community.
I love it. This was so good. Tell people where they can find you, your website, social media, whatever you have going up next.
Yeah, my website is shanitahubbard.com. You can find me on these social streets. On Instagram, I am Professor_Anita. On Twitter, I am Miss Shanita Renee. Renee is R-E-N-E-E. Come find me. And of course, you can buy Ride or Die wherever books are sold. If you are able to, Amazon is dope, but if you are able to support a independent bookstore, please do.
Please do get the book. It will have, if nothing else, it will make you reconsider how you thought about a lot of things. So thank you so much. This was great. And I can't wait for everybody to talk about how they read the book and what they think about it, how much they loved it. And I appreciate you for taking the time out to speak with me. This has been so dope.
Thank you so much for having me. This is my pleasure.